Okay, who's this?
Matt, this is Joe Osteen from Texas, and I called just to see if I could maybe get you to turn that frown upside down and get in touch with, you know, your total victory side, because we're supposed to have total victory, and all this venom and all this hell and brimstone you're always talking about, it makes me nervous.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? What you're telling me is that it's okay for you to just reject the Bible, but it's not okay for me to reject atheism and have my opinions based on that.
Well, there are different opinions on the Bible. I mean, everybody has different ways of looking at the Bible.
If the Bible says the elder is to be the husband of one wife, then the elder is to be the husband of one wife. Joel Osteen, I heard the recording, that when he was asked if Mormons are Christians, he said, well, yes, they believe in Jesus. It should never be the case that the guy with the biggest church in America would ever say anything like that. It just knee tackle all she's doing. It's just you get way back and you run. You get a running jump, you jump, you dive into the air, and then knee tackle her like they do in football.
Okay.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Faith and Reason time. I'm your host, Matt Slick, and I had one interesting weekend. Oh boy, some good and bad in it, but that's how weekends go sometimes. And what I'm going to do tonight, we're going to have open calls, and what I'd like to do is talk about the debate that I was in. If any of you were there and you're listening right now, would you please consider calling in and just let me know what you thought of the debate? You know, I just would be interested in hearing your opinions on that. So, you know, please consider calling in. The number is 877-207-2276. That's 877-207-2276. Please feel free to give me a call, and we can talk about that if you're out there. I know that there were some people there who had been listening to me on the radio, and were there and introducing themselves, and that was great. Love to see them. We had about, 200 people showing up, 250, I think. I don't know, give or take, but not a real good judge of that. The atheists were very polite. Eddie Tabash, my opponent, was very polite. There's only one thing when the atheist kind of clapped a lot when Eddie Tabash made what I call a false point. It was not really a point, but it was an emotional kind of a thing, and the atheist clapped because they like it, you know. The God of the Bible is mean, and blah, 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 and they clapped, yeah, 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 and stuff like that, which I'll address later tonight, hopefully. I think it was three, at least two, maybe three, right there in front of everybody, I challenged Eddie to debate me on which is better as an ethical system, Christianity or secular humanism, because I know he's a secular humanist. And I just asked him, let's do that. And he wouldn't take me up. He didn't say, yeah, let's do that. He didn't do that at all. I would absolutely love to debate him on that. And I've been thinking about some things. Would love to be able to work up an outline argument and the like. Now, I did release the argument that I used on Saturday night. I released it on the web on the atheism section. You can just go there and take a look at the debate section. And also, the PowerPoint presentation that I presented that evening, I also have there. It's a zip file. You can download it. And what I did, I think I had 21 slides, and I just went through the slides and basically read them, because all I did was put my outline on a slide form. So it kind of makes it easier for people to see. I wanted people in the audience to see the argument bit by bit. And what I did was I had about 200 double-sided pages of the argument in kind of a small print, because I'd make it fit on one page. And not too complicated, just an outline form. And I don't know, I have no idea how many were taken. But I also offered that for the atheist and anybody else who might be interested to take and review. And a couple things, we've got a couple callers hanging here in a sec, but already. But again, for those of you who went to the debate, I would love to hear what you have to say. If you're an atheist, please call up. That's fine. You know, if you're listening to the show, you want to talk about it, that's fine. Let's see. We got anybody? No, nobody. Nobody's about the debate. I'll talk about that after we take these calls. 877-207-2276. Let's get to Chris from New Jersey. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing, Matt?
Doing all right, man. Hanging in there. What do you got?
Good. I just got a couple questions on some verses in Matthew.
Okay. Matthew what?
The first one would be 15:13.
Matthew 15:13. That's interesting. It says, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be rooted up. Okay?
Does that have something to do with limited atonement?
Oh, I wouldn't think so. I would just think it Let's see, the context. The files went, but would proceed out of the mouth. The files, when the disciples came, said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement?" But he answered, "Every plant which Heavenly Father did not plant shall be rooted up." It kind of sounds like talking about truth, the issue of truth and the seeds of truth that Jesus was saying, and that people were rejecting them, they'd be rooted up. But I don't know. It kind of seems like what it is for me, anyway. So, wait, what do you think?
Well, I was just thinking because, that's almost what it sounds like with the wheat and the weeds that grew up with the wheat.
Yeah, Matthew 13.
The sowers and everything.
Right.
It almost sounds like it fits.
Well, it could, but I wouldn't use that in that context. Every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be rooted up. You know, plant is obviously representative of something, and you look at the context. It looks like, the Pharisees were offended when they heard what Jesus was saying. Then Jesus says that, so it seems to me that what he's talking about there is the truth, the issue of truth, the words of his truth that they're rejecting. That's what I would sense. I also love the following verse. It says, "Let them alone, they're blind guides of the blind." Excuse me. "And if a blind man guides a blind man, both will fall into the pit." I've loved that statement for years. I don't know why, but it's when the blind lead the blind, both fall into the pit and perish. That's kind of one of the versions I learned it out of. And that's just it's a hot verse. I just like that verse. But anyway, no big deal. What was the other question you got?
The other one was about the mustard seed and moving the mountains.
Yeah.
And it says that if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. Now, I'm pretty much guessing that that's not literal, right?
I don't know if it is or isn't. Now, when I was in college and I was doing my Bible studies, I remember looking out the window after reading those verses. And there was a small hill, within eyesight. And I prayed. I tried to be as faithful as I could. And I said, "Be cast into the ocean." And the ocean's only about 20 miles away at that point, maybe even less. And it didn't happen. I went and I asked my professor about it. He says, "Why didn't that happen?" He says, "Apparently you didn't have enough faith." Because that's what the Word says. That's what Jesus is teaching. That if we have faith, true faith, in God, things will happen. Now, along those lines, I want to say that I can remember in times of my life, it's going to be kind of hard to describe because it's so subjective, but there have been times in my life where issues, situations, whatever it is that might be, and what I've done is just trusted and had faith in God, just completely rested in Him and let it go. And it worked out in such a way that it was like, wait a minute, that was from God. And so I believe there's an issue of when you trust God, when you have complete and total faith in Him, things will happen. And I believe that if we have a believer who really does completely trust God as needs to be, it'll happen. It reminds me again another story of George Mueller. He was the guy who lived very faithfully, and he was an orphan guy. He led orphanages, and he actually prayed one day that the cold north wind would stop on a certain day, and it did, so that the furnace could be repaired in the orphanage. He prayed that fog would lift immediately when it was sacked in for hours, and it did. When he got the boat, he had to be someplace. Things like this would happen. He was able to, by prayer, apparently affect the weather. So, all according to God's will, too, though.
I can't even fathom about that, though. Because I think in everybody's mind, there's always a little bit of, skepticism almost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least in mine is, is this really going to happen? And
right.
That's, of course, not complete faith, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's called, atheists would say, of course it doesn't work because you doubted. So, they'd laugh at that. But, faith is only as good as who you put it in. And so our faith in God is sufficient to save us because God grants us that faith. But I believe there's other things that we need to learn as Christians about what it means to be faithful to God and trust Him and have His power work through us. Anyway, that's what I believe.
Very cool.
All right, man?
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, buddy. Hey, folks, you want to call 877-207-2276. Please feel free to give me a call. Is that the same guys before? Yeah? Okay. Let's get to Andy from North Carolina. Okay? Andy, how you doing?
Hello. Good, man. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Hanging in there. More hanging in there, but, you know. What do you got?
Well, I'm wanting to know about the three kings that the Antichrist will uproot. Will that position be given to someone else?
Okay, wait a second. You got to speak up a little bit. Three what?
The three kings that the Antichrist will uproot.
Will that
position be just thrown out, or will he give it to someone else?
I don't know. Don't know who the three kings are. It could be three of the nations that some people believe will be the rebuilt Roman Empire. I have no idea who it would be, if it's individuals or it's representative of nations. It's, you know, the ten kings will arise, but kings have to do with nations as well. So, I don't know. Okay, it talks in Daniel 7, Daniel 11 about this, and now I tell you the truth, that behold, three more kings are going to arise in Persia, and a fourth will gain more riches. And some people think that it has to do with, if I remember correctly, I don't know if this one has to do with Alexander the Great, but at any rate, I don't know. I don't know who the kings would be. Eschatology is like trying to nail jello to a wall.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I've recently started researching groups like the Illuminati.
Okay.
And I found out that there are 13 members.
Yes.
And
really?
If they were to lift up the Antichrist and he removed three of them, that would leave 10 kingdoms of money.
There you go.
For him to control.
There you go. That might work. And when the Antichrist comes, supposedly, how it's going to work is there'll be 3.5 years of peace, and then he will go to the rebuilt Temple of Jerusalem and claim to be worshipped, or need to be worshipped, and then it's all going to break loose at that point. It's going to get very, very bad. So, don't know who the kings are. I've heard a lot of different conjectures about the kings, the kingdoms, where it's going to come from. Some people think the rebuilt temple, it's going to be the rebuilt Roman Empire, that whole geographical area. Some think it's the Middle East with Syria and Babylon, places like that. So, I don't know. It'd be good to have an eschatology expert on to talk about that. But like I said before, eschatology is not my forte. So, okay?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of eschatology, why did John...
You got to speak up, man. Okay?
Speaking of eschatology, mm-hmm. Did John write on it anywhere besides Revelation?
Well, yes. I don't know. Well, yes, he did. In 1 John chapter 4, he's talking eschatologically about Antichrist who will arise and those who will deny. And then it'd be interesting to see what he says. Matthew 13, Matthew 24, Luke 17, Mark 13 deal with eschatology. But eschatologically speaking, I think there's snippets in John where he's going to come back and generic stuff like that, but nothing as in-depth as the synoptics. So that's a good question. That's a good question to see how much of John includes the issue of eschatology. Don't know if it does very much at all. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, man. Well, God bless. Folks, you want to call 877-207-2276. Let's get to Jeff from New York. This is the Jeff who... Met before.
Hello?
Jeff?
Matt.
How you doing?
Yeah. How's it going, dude?
It's going, man. It's going.
How's it going there? Tonight?
Oh, I'm exhausted, tired, ready to just fall asleep. It was up till 4 o'clock in the morning last night. Couldn't sleep. So
I couldn't sleep? Were you working or just couldn't sleep?
Couldn't sleep. Things in my mind, and that's the way it goes. And up till 4 and didn't get enough sleep, and it's hitting me. So that's the way it goes.
It does. It does.
Yeah, I'm faking it. Go ahead.
Until it really catches up with you and you pass out on the desk.
That's right.
Right on the Ustream, too. Oh, that
that'd be good. That's right. Mm-hmm. So what do you got, man?
Well, I was just calling to see how the debate went.
Well, I think it went very well. And, my wife was there. She said she thought it went well. And I think I'll get more details in a minute here, but let's just say that Mr. Tabash did not answer my argument, which I need to present here. After you hang up, I probably will. He did not refute my argument at all. And afterwards, an atheist came up to me and said, he said, I don't agree with basically anything that you stand for or said. But, but he says, but you won the debate. And that's what this one atheist said. Now, others could have said something contrary, but, you know, so I did challenge. Wow. I did challenge Tabash to a debate on ethics. And at least two.
Okay.
I think it was three times. I think we just start saying three. I think it's how many it was. It was at least two. But I did debate him. I did challenge him. He says, I will fly down to L.A. I will debate you on which is a superior ethical system, Christianity or secular humanism. Let's go. And he didn't say, okay, let's do it. That sounds good. He didn't do it. None of the time. So there's that. But I got some of the notes. He said things like, I didn't. I'm just looking through my notes. It's God's mind. Mm-hmm. I'll get into that. One of the questions was asked, what sets humans apart from other living things? That was a question. I'm just reading through my notes here. Your free will is... it's points I was making. But anyway, Mr. Tabash does not... Oh, yeah, he did not. These are my notes. I've noticed this about atheists, and it's really getting to be a more serious complaint that I'm levying against them. They really don't understand Christianity.
No, they don't.
They think they've got it down, and then they can just refute you. They'll just quote something out of the Old Testament. How come you don't kill homosexuals now? And they don't understand the divisions of the law. They don't understand covenant. Uh-huh. They don't understand the new covenant, where we don't do that. And if you say, well, the new covenant doesn't permit that, you know, or the old theocratic system is done away with, that's why we don't do that now. Oh, you're just making things up. They just refuse, apparently, to learn any serious Christian theology. And then they argue.
The truth and unrighteousness.
They absolutely do. That's right. You know, it was in one of the debates I heard when I was doing my research, that Tabash said that to another guy who brought up a similar argument that I raised, the cosmological argument, he said that, well, you're saying to this other guy, you believe he says, you believe you can't have nothing from nothing, but that's exactly what you do when you say God created the universe out of nothing. And
what?
Yeah, that see, exactly. I was like, that's not the Christian position. And he was arguing with the Christian and saying the Christian didn't know what he's talking about. But of course, the Christian position is that God did not create the universe out of nothing. He did it by a command and exertion of his will, and the power of his being and his essence brought the universe into existence. So it emanated out of the will and creative work of God himself. But, you know, it just things like this that I thought were rather revealing. I noticed that, of course, Edwin Kagan, when I debated him on Does God Exist in Pensacola, Florida, he didn't understand Christianity. When I read the book The God Delusion by Dawkins, it was profoundly evident he didn't understand what Christianity was. Profoundly evident. He didn't even do the basics of the research at any competent level. And I'm not the only one who said that about his book and his view on there. And when I debated Dan Barker, who used to be a preacher, I found that his understanding of Christianity was better than most atheists, but still he failed to really understand a lot of the issues. I don't really think he really knew what he was talking about to begin with, as Christian, very much at all.
Well, he didn't. I love how James White put it, that when Dan Barker objected to his own book being used, which was hilarious, by the way, but James White made the point, said, look, if I'm going to debate a Muslim or a Mormon, I'm going to do my research, and I'm going to hit the books, and I'm going to learn as much about it as I can.
That's right.
These atheists, they don't do that. They just come on with their straw man argument that culture just kind of accepts about Christianity, and they post this huge straw man, this scarecrow almost, if you will, of Christianity that couldn't be more wrong if you tried.
Absolutely correct.
Right now, Jay and I, we're witnessing right now, we're down we're downtown, we're talking to people.
Good.
And I just wanted to call because I wanted to know how the debate went. And he just talked about 20 minutes ago to a guy who said he grew up in the Methodist Church for 20 years. And Jay asked him some simple questions about Christian theology, and he didn't have a clue.
Well, probably United Methodist. Right. Whenever they say Methodist, say which Methodist? Is it United Methodist?
Right.
Always do that, because United Methodist is about as liberal as you can get and don't teach hardly anything.
Hmm. So. What's the other one?
There's one called Stupidification Methodist and Lame-o Methodist, something like that. I don't know.
No. Oh, I used to be an expert in that one.
Free Methodist is pretty decent. United Methodist, as a rule of thumb, anything with United on the front generally is bad. Now, there's a couple that are good that are United, but whenever you have a denomination with United anything, usually it's pretty bad. So, anyway.
I heard someone say something like that, like United has uni in it. So if you kind of see that general rule of thumb, unity, universalism.
Often, universalism is often another issue, but that's the way it goes.
But anyway, dude, I'm very glad and happy the debate went well.
It did.
I'm glad that you, I know you gave a competent defense. Is it going to be up on YouTube or any DVD coming out or video, audio?
I don't know. I haven't even gotten the Dan Barker stuff yet. Apparently it'll be sent to me this week. And then we're going to put that up however we're going to do it. And then whatever comes out of the debate from Saturday night, we'll then put it up. What I want to do, and I hope it doesn't sound sinful or whatever, but I just want to be able to see if I can sell for $20 each or something like that for a DVD set, just to recoup some of the costs, help turn the lights on, things like that. And so we'll probably do that for
the worker be paid for his paid his wages.
That's right. That's definitely a biblical concept. And then after probably 3 or 4 months, we'll probably just release it on YouTube. Like we did with the, I am tired. Sorry, I can't remember his name. Kagan, golly, I'm tired.
Yeah,
the Kagan debate. So you okay?
Definitely. Well, thanks. Thanks for taking my call, Matt.
Okay.
God bless. We're praying for you. Take care, and walk with Christ, my friend.
Amen. Thanks. God bless.
All right. You too.
Take care. Okay. Now. What I'm going to do now, hey, Cameron, let's not take any calls for 20 minutes or until I'm done with this, because what I want to do is provide an audio account of my opening statement. That's what I want to do so that we can do whatever we want with it later. But I want to go through the argument. I've actually got the argument in front of me. It's a bit heady, so I'm going to do this. It's going to take about 15 minutes for me to do it. So if you don't mind, if you guys are guys and gals out there in radio land or interested, podcast land, are interested, I know that this is going to be kept for a while. We're going to take this segment out. You'll be able to find this argument, this outline that I'm going through, on the CARM website. Just go to the atheism section or do a search for Tabash, T-A-B-A-S-H, and you'll find it. And it's right there. I'm just taking this right out of that. I've also got a PowerPoint slide presentation where this information is literally in the PowerPoint. Feel free to download it and use it in your churches, Bible studies, personal use. I don't care. That's fine with me. I just want to get it out. I'm not saying this argument is perfect. I just believe it's very good, and I do not believe that the opposition can resist this argument successfully. I believe that they are incapable of offering a competent response. Now, that may or may not be the case in reality. Maybe there is a refutation for this, but from what I understand, not so far. So what I'm going to do is go through this argument. And as I said, if you want to listen to this and get your brain in gear, then you might want to stop what you're doing and listen. And if you don't want to do this, just kind of tune out for 20 minutes, and then I'll be done, okay? Yeah, it's a 20-minute long argument, but you'll see why. You will see why. So what I'm going to do is start off with what's called an actual and potential infinite. An actual and potential infinite. The differences, what they are, what the differences are. Now, this is going to relate, and I'll explain why. An actual infinite is a timeless totality that does not increase or decrease with the number of members it contains. Now, here's an example. The number of points on a line is an actual infinite. There is no exact finite number of points on a line. You can have an infinite number. The problems exist, though, with actual infinites. Here's an example of a problem. Consider an infinitely long line of dominoes in the universe. Just imagine it just doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an ending. It's infinitely long. If we take half of this line, or it wouldn't really make it, yeah, just half of the line, okay, we still have an infinite number. But if one half of the original infinite contains the same number of dominoes as the original infinite, we've got a problem. This would mean that one half is equal to the whole. This cannot be. Here's another illustration of why actual infinites are problematic. Take an infinitely old clock. The hour hand makes its circuit around the face of the clock 2 times a day. The minute hand, 24 times a day. But an infinite amount of time results in both the minute hand and the hour hand having an equal number of rotations, even though the minute hand has 12 times as many rotations as the hour hand. Well, how can that be? If it's an infinitely old clock and the minute hand's going around 12 times faster, then if you were to go for infinity, then both the numbers are equal. There's like paradoxicals, they don't work. Now, on the other hand, let's look at what a potential infinite is. A potential infinite is comprised of a finite set that increases its number through time by adding members to its set. Each addition results in a larger finite set. Here's an example. Take this line. Now, earlier I said a line, how many points does it have? Well, it has an infinite number of points on it. But let's take a line. Let's just say it's a foot long. It doesn't make any difference. Divide that line in half, and then take one of those segments in half, and then in half, and in half. You keep doing this. You could do it forever. But as soon as you stop and look at it and count, you have a finite set. But it's a potential infinite in that its potential is to continue forever. It's not actually unnumbered. A potential infinite always has a finite number in it. It just keeps adding successively. Now, this is why, this is really kind of interesting at this point, to add in that when you throw a ball at a wall, it's like a paradox, they say, but it isn't. You throw a ball at a wall, it goes halfway there, halfway there, halfway there. Well, an infinite number of halves never equals a whole, so how come the ball gets there? Well, the problem is that it is confusing an actual infinite with a potential infinite. There's not an actual infinite number of halves. There's a potential infinite number of halves. For each time you cut it in half and half and half, you still retain a finite number. But you can continue to do this potentially forever. And so, therefore, since it's a potential infinite with a finite set number, therefore, it's not an infinite number of halves and the ball can reach the wall. Hope that made sense. All right, now, you cannot cross an actual infinite. See, let's imagine an infinitely long line of dominoes. By traveling along the line of successive dominoes, in order to arrive at any particular domino, you would have to traverse an infinite number of them in order to arrive at that particular domino. But an infinite number of dominoes cannot be traversed. Otherwise, it isn't infinite. So you cannot have an actual infinite number of dominoes. Let me say it again. This infinitely long line of dominoes. And you need to go down this line to get to any particular one. Well, in order to get to it, you have to cross an infinite number to get to it. But you can't cross an infinite number of dominoes. So these are like paradoxes. They're problematic. So what do you do with it? Well, this means that they really can't happen. Now, think about it this way. If each domino represents 1 second of time and each domino were falling one after another, representing successive moments in time, the line of dominoes could not be infinite in length. Could not be infinite length, in the past at least, because there would never have been a first domino that fell. If there is no first, there could be no second, no third, no fourth, and so on. Let me say this again. If you have an infinite number of dominoes, and they're falling 1 second after another, bang, bang, bang. Well, let's say you want to find the first one. Well, you can't, because there is no beginning. Because if you did find a beginning, it's not infinitely long in the past, is it? But if it's infinitely long in the past, you can't find the beginning. Why? Because there is no beginning. But wait a minute. If there is no beginning, then there can't be a sequence of events. Because if there is no beginning, how do you just have dominoes falling? Has to be the beginning of it. That's the issue. Therefore, an actual infinite, a timeless infinite number of successive events in the past is logically impossible. So that's a summary, you see. An actual infinite, a success of events in the past is logically impossible because, for reason one, it would require traversing an infinite number of events, which cannot be done. And, number two, there would be no first event. And without a first, there's no second, third, fourth. And the causation of the series could not begin. Okay, couldn't occur. Therefore, there must be a beginning of events. Now, at this point, what I want to do is jump into the cosmological argument. And here's how it works. The universe exists. Now, there are only two options available to account for the universe. Now, this is where you got to listen a little bit more, okay? It's going to take a while here to go through it. It's not so complicated and long. It's just part by part to explain some concepts. Now, again, there are only two options available to account for the universe. Just two. The universe either had a beginning or it did not have a beginning. It had a beginning or no beginning. This is called an antinomic pair. This antinomic pair exhausts all possibilities. It's like saying personal or impersonal. Something is either personal or impersonal. Or something has a beginning or has no beginning. These are antinomic pairs, and these that I've cited mean that there can be no third option. Therefore, these pairs are not false dichotomies, since there are no other options. Now, if the universe had no beginning, then it is either eternally static or eternally non-static. Now, what I'm doing is looking at two options. The universe had a beginning or it had no beginning. If it had no beginning, we have two options. It's always existed, or it was oscillating, forming and contracting. Those are the only options. It was either always there, or it was forming and non-forming. Now I'm going to go through those a little bit. So the eternally static universe, in other words, the view is if the universe did not have a beginning, then it had to always be here. It's called the eternally static universe. But this does not agree with the cosmic microwave background radiation studies, which shows that the universe had a beginning. You can go look at that if you want, CMBR. Just do research on cosmic microwave background radiation, and you'll find it. The other issue is that the universe always existed. If it always existed, it would mean that this would be impossible, since it would mean that the universe had an infinite number of successive events, atoms moving, stars forming, etc., before we got to now. But as we have seen earlier, this would imply an actual infinite, which we cannot have. It doesn't work. Therefore, the universe is not infinitely old. It had a beginning. So now we have to look at the other option. This is what I did. In a debate, I systematically went through the various options. Well, if the idea is it had no beginning, and it was eternally static, and that's removed, well, it has to be oscillating. Let's look at this possibility. Is it possible that the universe could be oscillating eternally? Okay. That it had come in and out of existence. It forms, contracts, collapses, etc. Well, first of all, this does not agree with the second law of thermodynamics. The universe as a whole is a closed system. There is no known mechanism for 100% efficiency exchange of energy in formation and reformation in the universe. Now, when I brought this up, Tabash tried to refute this by saying the universe doesn't really apply. I think he said it was a closed system or it was an open system. But the thing is that the energy exists in the universe or not. And there's no known law to account for how the universe could do this at a perfect rate. At any rate, I'm not going to get into all that. And I don't think that's the best argument. I think a better argument is point two. An eternally oscillating universe here would require an infinite number of oscillations, but this is impossible since it would mean the universe had an infinite number of successive events. The conclusion here is the universe had a beginning and could not have been eternally oscillating. So when I just let you know that when I'm done with this, I'm going to just give it to you in a real casual kind of a explanation how it works. And so just bear with me through this. Here's point number seven. If the universe had a beginning, then something brought the universe into existence. It brought it into existence. Okay. Now there's only two options. Now here's where it gets interesting. If the universe was caused to exist, we only have two options to explain it. An impersonal cause or a personal cause. There are no third options here. It's either personal or impersonal. There aren't any other options. The universe was brought into existence by an impersonal means or a personal means. That's it. Now here's the point I want to bring up about this. If there are only two possibilities to account for something, just two, No third, no fourth, none, but only two. If you negate one of them, the other one is automatically validated. It is automatically proven. It would be impossible to remove both options if those are the only two options available to account for something. So, for example, in the issue of the cause of the universe, an impersonal or personal cause. I mean, that's it. It's either impersonally caused or personally caused. You can't remove both of them and say, that universe came into existence, but we just don't know how. And we're going to remove both options. You can't do that logically. It's intellectual suicide to do that. So I'm going to come back to that in a minute, or two, or three. But here goes. Now, if the universe was caused by an impersonal force, an impersonal cause, we have two options to look at into that. Well, that means that the universe brought itself into existence, or the universe was caused to come into existence by something impersonal. So we would have to say that the universe brought itself into existence or was caused to come into existence. Well, let's look at this. If the universe brought itself into existence, we have a problem. You see, a cause like that is an action. An action results from something that exists prior to it. But if something has no existence, nothing, then it has no prior existence, no properties, no abilities, and cannot perform any actions. Therefore, nothing comes from nothing, and the universe did not bring itself into existence. In other words, it's impossible to have that the universe brought itself into existence. Why? Well, it's got to perform an action in order to do that. But in order to perform an action, it has to exist. It has to have properties. There has to be something to it. But if it doesn't exist, it has nothing to do anything with. It couldn't bring itself into existence. That leaves us with the other option. It was caused to exist by an impersonal means. Now, this is interesting. Now, here's where it's going to get a little bit deeper. Whatever caused the universe to exist, we're talking about an impersonal something. It would have to exist prior to the universe. Now, the existence, now here we go, the existence was ontologically prior, not temporally prior. Now, what that means is that it existed in essence, but not necessarily in a state of time before the universe. Now, I did some research, and I found out that in Mr. Tabash's debate with Phil Fernandez, at 54 minutes and 44 seconds in, he said, we can't even speak of a cause of the universe because there was no time and space for sequential causation to play out before the Big Bang occurred. We'll get to that in a little bit. But what he was doing there was saying that he denies temporality or the idea of time before the universe began, okay? And he's also saying he can't offer us a cause of the universe. So what he was doing inadvertently was admitting in this debate that you can't explain as an atheist the cause of the universe. Okay. So now what I want to do is look at, I know this is heady, folks, please bear with me. There will be people who want to download this and listen to it over and over again. Now, excuse me, let's look at an impersonal, ontologically prior cause. That means that something that existed before the universe, it existed, not in necessarily a state of time, but it was an existing thing and it wasn't personal, otherwise it'd be like God. There's this impersonal, non-God, just kind of a substance, whatever it is, something that existed in a timeless and changeless state. Either existed like that or it didn't. Now remember, he says, and a lot of people say, that before the universe there was no time. So that means it was timeless. Well, that means if it's timeless, it's not going to be able to change. It won't have its nature, its essence, be able to change. Now, on Tabash's site, tabash.com, he had a link to Quentin Smith, an atheist professor of philosophy. It is under the suggested links. And Mr. Smith says that the cause of space-time exists timelessly. What I was doing was just trying to support this idea from some acceptable sources from Tabash that this thing, according to atheism, the atheistic perspective, that existed before the universe and brought the universe into existence was timeless and changeless. Timeless and changeless. It existed before, but not in a temporally changing state, but in a timeless and changeless state. Now, here's the question. This is it, folks. How does an impersonal, ontologically prior cause of the universe that exists in a timeless and changeless state, how does it do anything? How does it just commit, do, make? How does it do anything? It doesn't change. It can't make any decisions. It just exists in a timeless, changeless state. It can't do anything then. It's not able to, because it would mean it would have to be able to perform an action, which means it would have to cause something to be. There must be some sort of effect necessary. We get in the cause of effect thing. But how does, from an atheist perspective, something that exists in a timeless, changeless state that is impersonal cause anything else to exist? It can't. All it does is just sit there. It doesn't do anything. It's timeless. It's changeless. That's it. Now, let's look at this. What if it was a non-timeless, changeless state that was also impersonal? There's an impersonal something out there. It's non-timeless, but it can change. There's some effect inside of it. Well, wait a minute. If the impersonal, ontologically prior cause existed in a non-timeless, changing state, then whatever caused it to change is a prior cause. And we would have to examine what caused that. It would be a cause external to itself, because it's not doing it itself, but something else acting upon it. Well, then, what would cause that to change? And what would cause that? And that? And that before that? Then we're back to the problem of an actual, actual infinite, of a series of events going back forever, because we have some prior issues before the universe, one after this, then we necessitate the issue of time existing in some form. So, we have a problem here, and the whole point is that the timeless, changeless state cannot account for the universe, and the timeless, changing state can't account for the universe, because what came before it, before it, and you're back to the original problem of an actual infinite, which is impossible. So the impersonal, timeless state or timeless changing state cannot account for the existence of the universe. We're almost done here, folks. I know this is heady, but we're almost done. So we know that the impersonal can't account for the universe. That means that since the impersonal cannot account for the universe, that's what I meant, if it cannot account for the universe, it's negated, it's removed. The only other option, the personal cause, is now validated. The personal cause is validated. That personal cause is God. Now, I could have stopped right there, but I didn't. One more thing to look at. There are only two options to account for a personal being to act to create the universe, an external and an internal cause. An external cause would only bring the issue of causation back to its prior cause for infinity backwards. We already dealt with that. That can't work. An internal cause in a personal being, which would be self-determined, that is a decision to act and bring the universe into existence. That would make sense. An eternally existing, timeless, changeless being that can make a decision to act and bring the universe into existence. That makes the most sense. The personal cause of the universe made a decision to act and created the universe. Now, that's the argument. Let me break it down a little bit simpler. It comes down to this. The universe exists. How did it get here? Something personal brought it in, or something impersonal brought it in? You can't have both, because they exclude each other. An impersonal stuff, just whatever it is, exists before the universe, isn't alive, doesn't think, doesn't know, just there it is. It doesn't exist in an ability, in a way to change. It just is. It's timeless and changeless. How does it do anything? How does it create the universe? How does it do it? It doesn't do it. How does it change and create the universe spontaneously? It doesn't work. But it can't. But if we have a timeless, changeless being that's existing, he can at any time, I use the word time in reference to his own existence in that state, he could just decide to act. And he can do that. And so therefore the universe exists. It's very simple. It's called the cosmological argument. And that's what I presented on Saturday night. Now, I know that may be a bit much for a lot of you. A lot of you probably right now gave up, saying, what the heck? If you want to read this argument, you can go to the CARM homepage. Just do a search for the debate that I had with Tabash, T-A-B-A-S-H, and you can read through the argument at your leisure. Or you can listen to this podcast over and over again if you want, and try and get this argument down. It is a very good argument. It deals with antonyms, with opposites that negate any third options, and therefore you just go through these things, and basically it makes a very good case for God's existence. Now, Eddie, and I liked him. He's a nice guy, actually. We'd get along. We'd probably have nice barbecues together. Seriously, he's a nice guy. But he was not able to deal with this. Now, what he did come up with, the best he came up with to try and refute the argument, was that it would mean that God was thinking in this timeless state, and that he would then make a decision, and how many times did he think about making a decision before he made the decision? Therefore, it's an infinite number of causes or an infinite number of thoughts for eternity, but you can't cross an infinite number of events, Matt, so therefore your thing doesn't work for you. That's what his argument was. But, you see, I came back and I said, well, two things. One, God knows all things instantly. He doesn't have to think. So what you're assuming is that your mind is how God's mind works. And so that assumption doesn't invalidate the point. And plus, since God is timeless and his thoughts are eternal, does not necessitate any causation or prior sequence of events of thought, just an eternal knowability. And then he can decide to move, and he can do that. It doesn't change his nature or his essence. It's an act of will, because his will hasn't changed. It's just the exercise of it in accordance with his nature. So that was the best he came up with. Now, think about this. I didn't bring this point up at the debate, and I wish I had. I thought about it later that night, and I thought, oh, man, there's a good point. You see, during our cross-examinations, our questions, our rebuttals for the rest of the evening, Eddie never once, the best of my recollection, and maybe I just missed it. I was typing on my computer, my laptop, trying to keep up with things and notes for comments later. Certainly possible that I missed it. But the best of my recollection, and I talked to a couple others who said the same thing, he never addressed the issue that I raised about the impossibility of an impersonal cause of the universe. Remember, impersonal cause being a timeless, changeless state. How does something like that just bring the universe into existence? Well, it can't. It can't do anything. He never dealt with that. But this is what happened. He went in and tried to refute the personal cause. Now, what I should have said later on, I didn't do it. I should have said, Mr. Tabash, what you're doing is, you are, by default, admitting my argument against the impersonal cause is valid because you are not addressing it in the slightest. It is standing. You've had several opportunities to do that. You've not addressed it. And now what you're doing is trying to refute the only other logical option. So you're trying to argue absurdity because it has to be either one or the other. You cannot negate both. It's logically impossible. It's logically invalid to do that, to say, well, this impersonal cause obviously can't work. And the personal cause obviously can't work either. So we have no options. But we exist, and that's our atheism. Thank you very much. Let's go home. Obviously, it doesn't work. Either one or both has to be able to account for something. Now, in this case, the cause of the universe is either impersonal or personal, and they are mutually exclusive, so you can't have both. It's either one or the other. Brought the universe into existence, an impersonal cause or personal cause. That's it. If you negate one, by default, the other one is validated. But what Mr. Tabash was doing was it was by default admitting the negation of the impersonal by never addressing the issue and instead trying to negate the idea of the personal. But he could not because his arguments didn't work. He never dealt with my argument at all. He didn't. He only tried to deal with the idea of a personal being, and I knew he would. Because in his other debates and his other issues, he's raised that issue up about God's eternal thoughts, not realizing and not understanding that God does not need to think in a sequential order, but all things are omnisciently known eternally from God, and all he has to do is act when he decides to. And so this is why I said earlier that atheists, if they want to debate Christians, they need to study Christian theology. They need to study the Christian concept of God, particularly when they're doing a debate on does God exist. Now, I will admit I did not support the Christian God directly in this argument. The debate topic was does God exist? It was not does the God of Christianity exist? Or is the Trinity true? It was not that at all. It was does God exists. So I dealt with that issue. Does God exist? Now, here's something else I want to say. I've noticed this with Kagan, Barker, and Tabash, whom I've debated now. Basically, the same thing happens. I'll bring up a point. And what they'll do is go to the Old Testament and quote stuff of the Old Testament. The God of the Old Testament, the God of the Bible, blah, 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 is mean, was bad, don't like him, he was horrible, wasn't very nice. Now, Tabash, Mr. Tabash did this. In his opening response, in his opening statement, I went first, took 20 minutes, did what I read over the radio tonight, and then he responded and he went into the Bible and things like that. Now, that wasn't on topic, okay? Now, here's the thing. This is how atheists work in debates. If I don't address all of these things that he raises, he could list off a bunch of stuff, and he did. In fact, in one debate in 20 minutes, he asked 40 questions. He would just ask one question after another, after another, after another, after another. Wouldn't answer them all, but he would just go in and ask all these questions. And that's not how you do a debate. Just ask questions. And I think it was for the reason of trying to win by asking questions. And I brought this up in one of my rebuttals Saturday night. I said, folks, you came here to hear logic. You came here to hear argumentation, not a list of questions thrown out as if the list of questions refutes an argument or a position, because that's not how it works. You want to hear a logical presentation on why something can or cannot be. This is what you need to do. Now, this is not what happened. Asking questions doesn't refute anything. It's a poor defense technique. It's a debate strategy. So, he asks all these questions. Why would the God of the Bible this? Why would the God of the Bible, murder people just because they didn't choose the right religion? Misrepresentations of the Christian position and things like that. So, here's the thing. Now, what do I do? I get up and I do my, a 10-minute response. Do I ignore everything that he said, and say, Mr. Tabash, you did not address the argument that I raised, and we're not here addressing all this. It's off topic. And I did say that at one point during the debate. I did mention that. But here's the thing. Psychologically speaking, if I were to get up and ignore everything he said, it would look as though I wasn't addressing his stuff, and emotionally it wouldn't be very satisfying. But if I go ahead and address the issues without leaving a vacuum there, then he says, and he did, you brought up the Bible, so therefore I can talk about the God of the Bible and his atrocities. So it's like a catch-22. Whatever you do, you are kind of caught. But I did try and keep it coming back to the topic at hand, to the issue of the causation of all things, and how Mr. Tabash had not refuted my argument. Now, he tried with the God thinking infinite thoughts for eternity thing. It can't have an actual infinite, but it doesn't work like that, and I already addressed that issue. So that's what happened. That was the debate, and I just didn't think Mr. Tabash, no disrespect meant to him. I mean, if he were here, and we were both going over this, reviewing the debate together, and I'd certainly let him give his opinion, and where he, I'm sure, thinks I failed in some areas, and I'm trying to be fair to him, seriously, but, he's not here, and I welcome him to call up, and we could dialogue about the debate and other things if he would like, He's a nice guy, really. I mean, it really was. We took a picture together, and after the debate, he gave me a hug, and, I could tell right away that that he and I could go out and have dinner together and just talk and probably argue about who's going to pick up the check. So really, seriously, a nice guy. It was a nice guy. Now, if you want to call folks for a couple last, about 5 minutes left in the show, 4 or 5 minutes left, you can call in 877-207-2276. If you were there at the debate, I'd love to hear what you had to say. I was thinking about all of this Saturday and today, and I went to my website, and I was going to the discussion forums, and I've been thinking about this, about the atheists and their rejection of God, and you know what? I've been wrestling with something. I've been wrestling with this issue of atheism and why atheists are the way they are. I know why they are. They're that way because they're totally depraved and they hate God and things like this. So I wrote a post, what I believe about atheists, and always, as of course, no matter what I say, the atheists argue about it. In fact, I put that post up, and I'm going to read it to you right now. And let's see, it's had 908 views with 78 replies in basically 24 hours. So this is what I wrote. Not a big deal, but I wrote this. Come on, get down here to this. There we go. Now, this is painting with a broad brush here, but this is what I see overall. This is what I believe about atheists. It really hit me after debating Eddie Tabash on December 5th, and I was talking to some atheists afterwards, just like the ones here on discussion boards. It helped to solidify some things I've been thinking about. You see, I spoke to a few atheists, agnostics, and no matter what I said, this was after the debate, no matter what I said, they looked for, sought for, hoped for a way out of believing in God and the responsibility that comes with that belief. It is just easier to be an atheist and make up your own truth and morality and responsibility. I do not believe that atheists as a whole are sincerely looking for truth. I believe atheists are looking for ways to stay atheists. I suspect some atheists might be a bit concerned about their own mortality and a possible face-to-face with God, but because they're so entrenched in science and proof and evolution and all that kind of stuff, and the quote, I want to be in charge of my life, morals, and decisions, unquote, kind of thing, that they just can't let go of it. They can't let go of their own place on the throne. Now, that was a post I put up, and the atheists are all over it, because whenever I post, I make a post, atheists are all over it, and they go on, any rate, it's ridiculous. But you know what? It was really interesting, because I talked to these people after the debate on Saturday. It's one girl in particular, 19, 20-ish range. And we're talking, and I was giving her really good evidences for the reliability and accuracy of the Bible and that the Gospels were written early by eyewitnesses. Because she said, how do you know? And I gave her the reasons. I mean, you know, the date markers in the book of Acts, which don't include the death of Paul, Peter, and the destruction of Jerusalem. This reasonably means that the book of Acts is written around 60 and earlier, AD 60 and earlier. Well, the book of Luke was written before that, you know, 5-10 years before that. Let's make it up. I don't know. And the book of Mark before that. So we have something within a generation very easily by the eyewitnesses being written, within a generation of Christ. I said, so they were written at that time. And she just looked at me and said, well, how do I know it's all true? And it was this, it wasn't just a disbelief, but it was this disdainful mockery kind of, I don't care what you say. And it really hit me. She wants to be an atheist. She wants to. She wants to deny God. It's easier to be an atheist, folks. It's easier to not have to deal with the inner struggles of morality, purity, issues. It's easier to ignore the universality of moral absolutes, the uncomfortableness of truth. It's easier to let go, fall into the abyss, and swim around in the mire of your own arrogance. It's all so much easier to do that. Atheists, I believe, are looking for a way to do that. I believe that they are looking, and I believe when they deny that that's the case, I believe they're self-deceived. That's my opinion. You don't have to agree with it, but that's my opinion. Atheists want to be atheists and are looking for ways to deny God, to deny truth, so they can stay on their own little thrones for the rest of their lives. Hey, folks, music's going. Hope you enjoyed the show. Well, God bless. We'll see you tomorrow night, Lord willing. Bye.
This has been Faith and Reason with Matt Slick. For more, go to carm.org. That's carm.org.
Your local Christian radio ministry serving Southwest Idaho on AM 790. Solid Talk, KSPD, Boise.